Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Mace Security International second quarter 2020 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker presentation, there will be a question and answer session. To ask a question during this session, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. If you require any further assistance, please press star 0. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Sanjay Singh, Executive Chairman. Thank you. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Deborah, and good morning, everyone. With me is Gary Medved, President and Chief Executive Officer of Mace, and Rem Belzinskas, Corporate Controller. Please visit mace.com. Investor Relations, where you can find additional materials, including the financial statements and OTC report for the quarter ended June 30, 2020. Before proceeding, I would like to point out that certain statements and information during this conference call will constitute forward-looking statements and are based on management expectations and information currently in the possession of management. When used during a conference call, the words or phrases will likely result, are expected to, will continue, is anticipated, estimate, projected, and intended to, or similar expressions are intended to identify forward-looking statements. Such statements are subject to certain risks, known and unknown, and uncertainties, including but not limited to economic conditions, limit of capital resources, impact of the current COVID-19 health emergency, and the ability of management to effectively manage the business. Such factors could materially adversely affect Mace's financial performance. It could cause Mace's actual results for the future periods differ materially from any opinions or statements expressed during this call. I will now turn the call over to Gary Medved to comment on second quarter 2020 operational results.
Thank you, Sanjay, and thank you everyone for joining us today. I'm very pleased with Mace's performance in the second quarter of 2020, a direct result of the hard work of all dedicated Mace associates. Our business demonstrated increasing strength as the quarter progressed, despite a few supply chain disruptions due to COVID-19. Going forward, our number one priority remains the health and safety of all our employees. From a product perspective, we are pleased that our customers continue to recognize the value of the Mace brand and love the exciting new look of our products and packaging introduced this spring. During the quarter, we placed several new products with a large national retail chain and a large national automotive retailer. Another sign of the strong organic growth we continue to experience as a result of our new strategy implemented during 2019. While many of our larger brick and mortar customers continued to operate during the pandemic, they did experience a drop in foot traffic in the early part of the quarter. However, once the lockdown was lifted mid-quarter, we experienced and continue to experience a substantial increase in incoming orders across all channels. We also experienced a substantial uptick in our e-commerce sales, a direct result of shelter in place and a strong shift towards online purchasing. We continue to experience a substantial increase in online traffic for our own website, as well as our e-commerce partners, attributed to our social media advertising strategy initiated early Q2. Also early in the quarter, we completed a national consumer insight survey. We gained several valuable data points about our target audience, opportunities to better educate our customers, as well as specific product features our target audience desires. We've acted on these insights and will continue to develop new strategies going forward based on this information. I will now turn the call over to Sanjay to discuss details behind the financial performance.
Thank you, Gary. Second quarter net sales were $3.4 million, a 16% increase from $2.96 million in the same period last year. This increase in net sales was driven by organic growth, product line extensions to existing customers, and the addition of new customers. Gross profit increased $473,000, or 51%, to $1.4 million, or 40.8% of net sales during the 3 months ended June 30, 2020, compared with $927,000, or 31.2% of net sales during the 3 months ended June 30, 2019. Gross profit improved in the second quarter due to higher sales volume, improved efficiencies gained from higher production due to higher sales, and the impact of one-time costs that occurred last year, primarily related to the discontinuation of the less lethal munitions product line and an E&O reserve. SG&A expenses for the second quarter decreased by $578,000 to $841,000, or 24.5% of net sales, compared with $1.4 million, or 47.8% of net sales in the 3 months ended June 30, 2019. SG&A expense decreases are primarily attributable to a one-time receivables impairment last year, as well as lower salaries and outside marketing expenses in the current year. As a result of the above, net income improved by $1,059,000 to $453,000 in the 3 months ended June 30, 2020, or 13.2% of net sales, compared with a net loss of $606,000 in the same time period, 2019. EBITDA for the second quarter, 2020, was $596,000, or 17% of net sales, compared to EBITDA of negative $481,000 in the same quarter of 2019, for an improvement of $1,077,000. Second quarter adjusted EBITDA was $655,000, compared to a negative $475,000 in the second quarter of 2019, for a $1,130,000 improvement. For the 6 months ended June 30, 2020, net sales increased $544,000, or 9.6%. EBITDA for the 6 months June 30, 2020 was $836,000, or 13.4% of net sales, compared to a negative $1.2 million in the same period of 19, for an improvement of $2.1 million. Adjusted EBITDA for the 6 months ended June 30, 2020 was $913,000, compared to a negative $975,000 in the same period of 2019, for a $1.9 million improvement. From a liquidity perspective, we saw a net increase in cash and cash equivalents of $1.3 million from December 31, 2019 to June 30, 2020. The undrawn portion of a line of credit was $900,000 at June 30, 2020. As disclosed in our financial statements, due to current economic uncertainty necessary to support the ongoing operations, as well as the limited ability for us to access capital markets in a timely manner, the company applied for and was granted a PPP loan from its bank through the US SBA in the amount of $619,000 in the second quarter of 2020. I will now turn the call back to Gary, who will discuss outlook and priorities for the remainder of 2020.
Thank you, Sanjay. Going forward, our internal focus includes process improvements, including manufacturing efficiency improvements and stringent cost control. Sanjay continues to work with REM on gross to net reductions, as well as E&O. Looking outward, our focus will be landing new retailers, introducing product line extensions, and new products. At this time, I will stop and open the line to questions. I would ask each caller to limit themselves to one question with one follow-on to allow everyone a chance to participate. If we have additional time, we will try to get you back into the queue. Operator, please open the line for questions.
As a reminder, to ask a question, you may press star and the number one. Once again, that's star and the number one, and we'll pause to compile the Q&A roster. And you do have a question from Vijay Marolia.
Congrats on the quarter, gentlemen. I saw the significant reduction in SG&A. Do you see any risk to that increasing in the next few quarters?
Are there any risks? We do see some investments taking place in the third and fourth quarters as we finalize some of our digital plans. We're being very cautious with our spending and very pragmatic, but we do expect to see a bit of an increase, but we also expect to see results on the top line from those investments.
Excellent. Thank you.
Your next question is from the line of Andrew Shapiro.
Yeah, hi. Have a few questions. I'll ask the one and a follow-up and back out, but please come back to me. So I saw on your slide deck for this call a chart that discusses or illustrates the incoming orders, and the incoming orders being up huge as the quarter progressed and dropped down, but now are rising again. This is a 12-day moving average thing. And you mentioned in the slides also a sizable Q3 backlog. So I'm assuming you would have quantified it if you were willing to or wanting to do that. But can you give some insight as to the backlog visibility? In other words, the backlog that you're describing, is it like a 1 or 2 month? What is like the turnaround time? Like a backlog for a Boeing jet is, you know, years. What's your backlog time duration like here?
Hi, Andrew. Thank you. Yes, the two charts are referring to the 12-day moving average, as explained on that chart, is a 12-day average of incoming orders. So we come bring in orders every day, and we kind of smooth that out, taking a 12-day average. I found over the years that 12 days is a nice number. It's not too short, not too long, and it gives us a pretty good identifier. So that chart that you're referencing is on slide 8 of the financial overview that we've included this year or this quarter. And just in summary, you know, that zero line represents what our average daily incoming was for the first couple months of the year, straddled around that line, and then it took about, you know, nearly a 50% haircut from where it was when everybody locked down. Kind of short-lived, but, you know, it went on for a few weeks anyhow. And then once it opened up, it rose incredibly up to 250% of our normal average incoming orders over a 12-day period. The chart shows that it did come back down a little bit and then turn back up, and we're kind of riding in a range right now, Andrew, around those numbers that you see. The backlog is heavy. I'm not going to lie. It continues to be heavy, continues to come in heavy. And to put a time on it, it's almost a moving target. What it was just 3 weeks ago is different than what it is right now. And referencing slide 9, I think, can give a better perspective of that, because I broke it down by month, and where April was down about 20%, to previous April of last year, May was down, I think, around 5%. Then June shot up 65%. So this graph has gone exponential, and I can say it's continued that trend into Q3. okay? We don't like to give hard numbers out for obvious reasons, and we can't anticipate what we're going to ship this quarter. The backlog is substantial, and like I said, it's building each day. Incoming orders are heavy, and we're doing everything we can from an operational standpoint. We've got a lot of purchase orders were placed, a lot of components coming in on a daily basis. We've added another shift to fully staff practically. We have a couple open positions, and our fill room is just running flat out to get all the cans filled that they can. So there's definitely been a shift, and we're trying all our, to do what we can to keep up, but the orders have not let up yet, okay, in summary. They're robust and continue to be robust.
Okay, and so to the extent your sizable sales increase was to retailers, do you have much visibility on the sell-through? Like, to what extent was the sales increase initial stocking orders, or have you seen reorders come in now?
Oh, the reorders have been heavy. We get POS data from our retailers, and some we get on a weekly basis, others we get on a daily basis. And I can tell you this from one of our largest retail partners, we get it on a daily basis. And last week's numbers were the highest sell-through rate that we've experienced with them. And that is point-of-sale number. That's what's moving off their hooks to consumers. Their replenishment orders are robust. So, we're not seeing this, and I guess I should qualify what we're witnessing here is not a simple fact of somebody taking an initial order for a new retailer or new distributor or dealer, and that's bumping up the numbers. These are ongoing numbers. This is heavy sell through at the retail level. This is heavy sell through at the distributor and dealer level as well. Okay, so without getting into exact numbers, I can tell you that, one of our largest retail partners here is running POS highest that we've seen ever. And
that's outstanding.
Much higher than what it was. Now, I want to say one thing about that, Andrew, if I could. There's the product, there's the look of the product, there's the look of the packaging. Our goal all along has been to make this a consumer-oriented product that grabs the consumer's attention as they're walking by retail displays. And that is working incredibly well. And plus, we're getting new locations in a large automotive national retailer. We've been moved to the front of store. And that move took place months ago when they saw what the new packaging and product was looking like, and they bumped us up to the front of store, which is, as you probably can be aware, that's valuable real estate. And we've seen a substantial uptick with that retailer since that move was made, and then with the new packaging and product. So there are a lot of things working hand in hand here, okay? And it's paying out right now. So
excellent. And by the way, it's a really impressively improved slide deck. So, hopefully most people will find it and see it. And I'm assuming you'll kind of use that in your upcoming investor stuff. I have several more questions. I'll back out into the queue, but please come back to me.
Okay.
And again, to ask a question, you may press star and the number one. Your next question is from the line of Ken Fowl.
Good morning, gentlemen. Appreciate the call.
Hi, Ken.
I just noticed on slide number 11, I think it is, where you talk about two new products that are outpacing your 2020 forecast by 250%. Can you identify these two products for me? I'm just curious.
Yeah, one of them was a two-pack water trainer kit that we came out with. Introduced this spring. It shipped from here in February and was placed on the planogram in March. We were given an early forecast by our retail partner who has this on their hooks, and they gave us a forecast in January. They upped that forecast, I believe, in March, if I'm not mistaken, and we are far outpacing that forecast. And this 250% is an average between the two, because the one I just spoke of is much higher than that. The second item was a the neon product line that we came out with. We used to have just all black on the shelves, and now we have the neon line out there. And we track the colors specifically on a daily basis to see which ones are moving through POS. And incredibly, well, black and pink are always going to be most popular, but the other colors we've introduced are very popular in their own right. And there's heavy sell-through on that. It's a six-piece kit that we've – not kit, but a six-piece package that goes out for the wreather. So there's six different products in there, colored products, and those are exceeding what we had initially thought and was given forecast when we went out there. A third item I didn't speak to or put in this presentation, but there's a 100-store test on another item on a click strip, four locations, a 100-store test. We exceeded their expectations by three times what they thought it was going to do or what their target was. And then we learned about a month ago that they're adding it to or rolling it out to 1,500 additional stores. And we're building that product now for it to ship in the next couple of weeks. So that's a huge boon for us. So, you know, again, you know, this isn't rocket science here. This is simply matching up the look of the product and to the expectation of the consumer. And I think we're hitting our stride on a number of these issues. So, and the numbers are showing.
Great. Great. So when you talk about product extensions, is this kind of the example with the neon colors and that kind of thing?
Right. There, you know, we don't get down into the detail of, you know, product line, but yes, it's neon colors. It's putting kits together, a water trainer kit. It could be a clip strip item out there in the stores. We are working on new products. You know, ground up new products, you know, from the ground up, I should say, that we'll be introducing down the road. I don't have a timeline on those right now as we're, you know, getting through the design engineering and so forth. So our goal here last spring when we started this whole mission, so to speak, was to become a very consumer-oriented, customer-centric looking product. And I know we've achieved that because the retailers are really warming up to the new look of the products and the packaging. And then going forward, we have new products that we're working on. So we're going to get the growth, you know, through a lot of channels or a lot of efforts. This is going to be a key one right here.
Great. At this time, I'll back out, but I do have a couple more questions, so please come back to me. Thanks.
And again, to ask a question, you may press star and the number one. Please hold for the next question. You do have a question from Vijay Marolia.
Gentlemen, I wanted to find out whether there was any news on the IR front. I love the slide deck, and I agree with what Andrew said. That's the best slide deck that I've seen from the company, I think, since I've been a shareholder. And if I'm a small cap value manager or a special situations fund manager, I would love to get my hands on that. So just curious, is there anything on the IR front?
Yeah, thank you, Vijay. We're going to be sending out a press release here by the end of the week with the IR conference schedule for the remainder of the year. We do have four conferences. We don't have locked down the exact day and time on these, but in early September, we have the LD Micro 500 conference. Late September is the Investor Summit Microcap conference. I'm assuming these are all going to be virtual, okay, right now. That one's supposed to take place in New York City. I don't see that happening by late September. Early October, October 8th, is the OTC Virtual Investor Conference. And then December 8th through 10 is the LD Micro main event. So, again, we'll be putting a press release out with all four of these on there. We're hoping to lock down the schedule, the exact day and time. If not, we'll at least have that on there and then update accordingly. And when we do lock in a day or time, it'll be posted on our website. So we have four more events. We've already done two this year. So that'll be quite a bit for this year. And
And Vijay, this is Sanjay. I also want to add to that that I'm in the process of interviewing outside IR firms. So it's time for us to do that. This is absolutely the right time to do that. So
thank you.
And your next question is from the line of Andrew Shapiro.
Hi, thank you. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that my dearly departed friend, Thurman Willis, is smiling from us from on above about the efforts you're now taking to bring fans to the stand. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Regarding your sizable growth rate of 50% year over year and over 125% increase from last quarter to tactical customers, and I know it's a very small portion of the company's sales as we're much more consumer focused, but do you feel the demand drivers are sustainable or the result of special demands from civil unrest events this past quarter that contributed to that are have led to this very sizable growth in that subsegment?
Andrew, I'll offer sort of some broad comments to that. We don't know. We can't state anything factually looking out, you know, in terms of trends. What we do see is a couple of different things. The POS sales that Gary brought up, that certainly reflects the social climate in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we do see that being continuing, but not knowing where what that will look like in the next, you know, few quarters to be in a very specific fashion. But there is a general sentiment around personal safety and security. Secondly, a lot of the social media advertising that we launched this quarter resulted in an uptick on the number of visitors to our website across all our platforms. So we certainly see an interest there and an awareness there, and we plan on capitalizing on that.
Mm-hmm. And Andrew, just to piggyback on that, the items that I just talked about, you know, the packaging, the look of the product, you know, getting like even on a clip ship program, getting those in locations in retail where women shop, because they are our number one demographic. All this goes hand in hand, and you've heard me say before that luck is the, you know, defined by opportunity, meeting, preparation. And we've been preparing for, you know, growth for the last year plus since I came in here, and repositioning the product as a consumer package, consumer-oriented product. And, you know, when we get a retailer to move us to the front of store before any pandemic shift, and that was their strategy because of what they were seeing from us, you're going to get a bump. But this all goes hand in hand, and, you know, we can't give any percentage. We just don't know what the extent of it is. You know, due to civil unrest or what have you, but I do know the things we were doing or the things we did were already starting to work before COVID-19 really locked down the country in March, okay, or April. We were already seeing improvement. Did it bump? Yeah, probably had something to do with it. To the extent, we don't know.
I'll try to rephrase or clarify my question. I was actually focused on the sales table that you have in your financial statements that broke down as a small subsegment is sales to tactical customers. And I was just wondering if you felt when you referred to sizable growth in private label, do you consider your takedown to be private label? And that was a component that saw the sales growth, or if not, did takedown products experience sales growth as well?
Partial. So takedown is not considered private label. We own that brand, okay?
Right.
And as you know, okay, that goes primarily to the LE or police tactical channels. So we've seen an uptick, you know, in that product line, we've seen an uptick in private label that serves the LE market. Okay. You know, it was moving along, and then, you know, the weekend of Memorial Day changed that
right.
substantially. And so, you know, it's out there, Andrew, but as you said, it's a small percentage of our overall revenue, and, you know, we don't
right.
put enough focus on it, okay, to keep customers happy, and we're really happy with the business that we have there, and you know, we're looking to doing some different things, even grow that business with our private label customers. But, you know, to the extent, you know, Takedown, it's our brand, it's moving, and then it's up to our private label customers on how well they're positioning their brands in the LA
okay.
market, and we ride that wake, so to speak.
Sure. So moving on to a bigger component, and one that you mentioned and experienced triple-digit growth, you know, far exceeding your tactical growth, is e-commerce. And I was just wondering is if you could update us if there's any additional detail you can provide in terms of the scope and the size of e-commerce sales and how the various channels such as Mace.com and Amazon and others performed. And do you has the average unit price moved up from prior year as a result of this? And are your conversion numbers rising?
Across e-commerce channels and Mace.com,
partial sales.
We're experiencing a triple-digit rate, okay, in both of those segments. I think the drivers are one, we're doing a lot better with the SEO side on our e-commerce partners, okay, where people can find us, and we're gaining traction on search results there. And then on the Mace.com side, I think a lot of that is contributed to the or related to, I should say, social media advertising and driving heavy traffic to our website. I wouldn't specifically say that the average selling price has gone up, but what I can tell you is the average order size has gotten substantially larger. And there's one or two good reasons for that, but we'd like to keep those reasons in-house.
So, okay.
We're going to continue doing more of that. But, you know, Mace.com is experiencing a nice surge in activity in terms of traffic. The conversion rate is improving, but it's nowhere near where we want it to be. And we may be greedy on that front, but we want it substantially higher than where it is. We're told that we're above average, but, okay, there's no fun in being above average. We want to be excellent and magnitudes higher than where we are. And then on our e-commerce partners, like I said, a lot of that is we have a new partner managing the e-commerce business, and they're taking a different approach, a fresh approach, and we're seeing some early kickbacks on that as well. So, you know, e-commerce, it's all about SEO and getting traction with your brand and your product at the top of search results. And on Mace.com, it's all about driving traffic. And once they get there, selling them a story on Mace products. And so
mm-hmm.
we're happy with the efforts, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to lie, there's substantially more work to do and better numbers ahead for us on those fronts.
In terms of your gross margin mix, I assume but would like to confirm that e-commerce margins are higher than traditional retailers. And without being exact, can you provide a range for that higher level of gross margin? Is it 400 basis points, 800 basis points, more or less?
It's more than less. And as you know, direct-to-consumer, where we control it, okay, we're selling it, you know, for the most part, suggested retail prices out of our catalog, and people are willing to pay up for the brand. So can you find it lower cost in retail? Yeah, you can, but people come to our website, they're coming in droves right now, and they're paying a higher premium for it. So we enjoy very nice margins on our website. Other e-commerce partners, we enjoy, I'd say, decent margins. We're not hurting there. But then again, we're not in this to give this product away either. Okay, so people are willing to pay for the Mace brand, and we're gonna have price integrity across everywhere that we're represented. So
right. And speaking of premium for the Mace brand, I think Vijay asked the question, and I'm just wondering, you guys have revamped the logo, you revamped the packaging, et cetera. What's the timing, I guess, of the rollout, and to what extent you can describe the rollout plans you have to now, like, push the brand, to help monetize this brand, because the brand monetization and getting that premium and moving product out, and whether it's licensing or otherwise, that's what's going to really, like, drive pre-tax income to have the benefit of the company's, I guess it's around $56 million tax NOL.
Yeah. You're not far off of the NOL number. We have some things we're looking at, I can tell you that, and I know you're a strong proponent of leveraging the brand, but I'm sure you also agree it's got to be the right situation. And
yes.
So we have a couple that we're looking into. We've had some conversations. Certainly not willing to put anything out there now because, you know, these things could always take a different turn, you know, between now and then. But mm-hmm. I would say probably late Q3, we might have something to talk about at that point. Okay, if anything moves, it should be by then that we might have something to say. But at this point, we get where you're coming from, Andrew. We agree with it. But like I told you early last year when I first came in here, the goal was to clean this thing up first and get it relaunched and, you know, really get people to recognize the brand and then start leveraging it after that. And because the two go hand in hand, we need a strong retail presence out there at the same time. And I think now that we're starting to achieve that, the brand leveraging can come
right.
down the road. I'll leave it
Let
at that.
Me clarify, and then I'll back out into the queue if I could. I think you answered, I made the mistake of asking the question as two parts, and you answered the back end part, which was on the licensing stuff. But on the front end part, do you have plans? Is there a timing for rollout that we should be looking to that we might notice a much greater marketing, digital marketing, social media? I don't think you're doing TV yet, but, you know, just basically additional marketing that you're going to be putting in to now really create demand drivers for the product, for the Mace brand product.
Yeah, well, as mentioned already, we're doing a lot of that on social media advertising, on search advertising as well. But to your point, we have a conference scheduled for later this month. It's a two-day on-site conference with a very well-recognized brand consultant, if you will, that we had this scheduled for March, and then COVID-19 hit and all travel was off, so we postponed it, and now we've got it rescheduled for late this month. That conference, we're going to use that to wrap up some key questions around the brand. I'm not going to get into them right now because it may lead to some other discussion, you know, during the conference. But the goal always was to, you know, to do the consumer insight survey early in the year, which we finished. Number two was to have this conference or seminar held in-house with our key leadership team. And then number three was to take that message and put it out, you know, through content, advertising, anything that's, you know, front-facing to the consumer out there and, you know, building the brand that way. So COVID-19, you know, kind of threw a wrench into that spinning wheel. But now that we got it scheduled late this month, once we're finished up and wrapped up with that conference and taking the action items from there and who's going to be responsible for what and just melding this all together with the consumer insight survey and what we learned from that going forward. So, you know, much like the licensing of the brand, you know, we're looking at a late Q3, Q4 implementation to where the public will start to see or notice.
Okay. Thanks for answering that first part of that question. I'll back out. I do have more questions, so please try to come back to me.
We will.
And again, to ask a question, you may press star and the number one. Your next question is from the line of Ken Fell.
Yeah, just, I guess, a follow-up on Andrew's brand leveraging, licensing, the Mace brand question. Sanjay and Gary, are you guys looking actively maybe into acquisitions at this present time, or are we more focused on the organic growth?
We are very open to acquisitions in general, so long as it solves one of it solves a problem and it's good for our customers. So we're open to it. We are engaged in licensing discussions.
Great. I think that's it for me, guys. So I appreciate the call and look forward to next quarter. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken.
Your next question is from Andrew Shapiro.
Thanks for the opportunity for some follow-ups. Just in assessing the quality of your improved gross margins and your improved operating margins, I just want to ask, I think I know the answer, but was there any reduction in the current quarter's cost of goods sold due to recoveries from past written off or reserved inventory or other items? And was there any reduction in the current quarter SG&A due to recoveries from past written off or reserved items?
Rem, you want to get that?
Rem?
I'll answer it, Andrew, no. But as we've explained in the roll forward, as well as in the opening, that there were no one-time occurrences in this quarter. They were, when you compare the two, that's where the big jump came in. You know, I think there were about $489,000 worth of there were two primary events. One was a AR impairment last year,
right,
and E&O and a munitions issue last year, but none this quarter.
Okay. Nothing comes back to enhance it. So these are good, clean, great margin numbers. So that's one of the things I just wanted to make sure I got a handle on that.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons we had a 2019 like we did.
Yeah. So Gary, are you experiencing the COVID circumstances right now getting in the way of your goal and attempt to see or make progress at getting retailers to have a personal safety category or a personal safety section in their aisles? Or is that, I know it takes time anyway, is that resonating through, you know, I guess your virtual Zoom calls and other things that you're making progress in that goal?
Yeah, that's a good question, Andrew. So with all the category review meetings and conference calls with buyers and this year, the last quarter, Zoom calls, you know, we set that out as a overall strategy last year, was ultimately to have a personal safety category in retail where it was prominently displayed. So meeting with retailers over the last year and a half, they get that, they see it, and they want to be attached. They want that category to be attached to the Mace brand because it means so much to so many people. And they also enjoy the margins that they get with it in a lift. So that being said, we've had retailers, you know, buyers or even higher than buyers, like directors or VPs tell us at, you know, the corporate level, we get your strategy, we want to be a part of it, and we'll help you get there. But as you mentioned, these things take time. So how they roll out is by, you know, an existing retailers, you're adding, you know, you work to get another hook in there to broaden your product offering and not have six pepper sprays that have different products in there to round out the category. Every year marching towards that end goal of having a non-lethal personal safety products display. Other retailers where we're starting at ground zero, where we have no placement and we're working to get in the door, okay, they're not coming in with a full category. They're going to start themselves with one, maybe two items, and then we will grow from there. So, you know, this is a monumental shift in the thinking of the average retail buyer and the retailer overall. I think they're now starting to witness the importance of personal safety products that don't kill people, and they see us as playing a huge role in that going forward. So Would I like to have had it done yesterday or last year? Absolutely. But I also know they're in step with us, they're in concert with us in achieving that, but both parties recognize that it's going to take a little while to get there. So for every product we get in, something has to come out. And no retailer's pulling six products out or eight products out to put in a Mace product display on day one. So the strategy hasn't changed, the mission hasn't changed, and I'm going to dog it as long as I'm here to see that that happens.
Okay? It certainly would play well in the acquisition opportunities, whereby all of a sudden you get more hooks because you have different, you know, expanded lines, and Mace becomes a personal safety brand rather than, you know, just sprays, et cetera.
Right, and Sanjay raised a good point. You know, acquisitions, as attractive as they could be now with the low cost of capital, we get that, but I think the more important thing is just to acquire for the sake of acquiring doesn't really get us much, okay, especially if we're going to tax the organization with implementation, integration strategy, and there's a lot of effort that goes through an acquisition, and at the end of the day, you want that thing to be creating shareholder value, and to acquire just to acquire, it's really got to be a good thing for us. It's got to be a great thing for our customers. We got to be solving a problem that exists, and not just acquire for the sake of getting bigger.
That leads me to your Tornado acquisition, because that would be like an example of that. And I saw that the company was able to prepay its Tornado acquisition contingent note at a discount. And with the use of some unregistered shares, I was just wondering, when were those shares issued, and what are the restrictions, if any, attached to the sale of those shares, or have they been sold already?
I can't comment on that without having the most accurate data in front of me. I can't tell you when they were issued. I wasn't part of that process. Mark Barris was here, our previous CEO. I believe they were issued in Q2.
They were in Q2, but I didn't know if
they have
early
a 12-month restriction. That I can't tell you.
12-month restriction. All right.
12-month restriction on them. It did allow us to close that agreement out prematurely, so we were happy to do that, accomplish that.
Yeah, and a discount that resulted in a gain, so that was great.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding the only type of customer where there was a year-over-year decline, I just want to get a handle on some of this to know if it created backlog and it's reversed. Can you further expand on the negative impacts to the availability of product that hindered your sales to international customers? And now in August, has the availability been remedied and the problem behind us?
Yeah, the international front, there were really two issues, okay? First of all, the country started shutting down outside of our borders before we did, if you remember how this pandemic swept through Asia and then over to Europe and then the United States. So a lot of the activity that was in motion was put on hold. And these companies didn't just work from home. They literally shut down, these distributors and partners of ours. So we lost at least 2 months until they started opening up their doors again. And that delayed shipments. Now, we have a nice backlog of order book of international shipments. I don't want to say backlog because it's not like we're running huge past dues here. That we do have a nice order book for international shipments currently sitting out there, and they're going to start shipping here. You know, by late August, early September, you'll see a nice bump in international. And the other side of that too is when this swept through, you know, there were supply chain disruptions here and there. They were sparse, but they impacted us one way or the other, where we couldn't get a component. Couldn't get this, couldn't get that, and, you know, they were shut down. And when they opened up, they had lost some of their workforce. When they were furloughed, they found other jobs or whatever. I think we've managed through the bulk of that, both on the international side and then, you know, to another extent, the supplier base that we use domestically. So those issues have been worked through, and Q3 you'll see a difference in numbers.
So that's good to hear about this.
Yes. For the sake of clarity, I'd also like to add the fact that when you see the kind of demand that Gary highlighted, as you can understand, given our lead times, that did cause some issues in terms of, you know, being out of stock on items. Now, in the whole scheme of things, we managed through it. So it wasn't just international, it was domestic as well. It's not reflected in our numbers, but it was part of the supply chain. I mean, any supplier to major retailers, especially in these types of categories, when you see those kinds of demands, it's, you know, it was not forecasted. But we're managing through it. I just wanted to make sure that the whole frame is clearly understood.
Right. Now, it's great to hear on the international that it's a backlog built rather than lost sales. Do you expect the year-over-year growth, do you expect year-over-year growth going forward or simply a return to normalized levels? And I say this because there was a period of time of, I don't know, you call it civil unrest, but around the New Year's holiday when there were stories of immigrant attacks, et cetera, around New Year's in Europe, and that caused a huge spike in international sales of pepper. Now in these times with various protests and things that have gone international, not just here in the United States, do you think by moving through the backlog that you've, you know, built up here because of the COVID closures and all that, that there is a sustainable and higher level of demand internationally once this backlog kind of gets caught up?
Well, okay, you got multiple parts in there. The international side, yes, they tend to have, you know, I wouldn't say explosive opportunities, but peak and valley opportunities. You know, we get hits occasionally like that. You know, we'll get a lot of government tender quotes coming in or requests for quotes coming in. You know, as I explained last year when we brought Julie Evans on out in Chicago to handle international sales, you know, the goal is to move to master distributors in countries, you know, lock up one key distributor in a country and move to the next one. And she's been implementing that. You know, we're adding new distributors. That's really our strategy. Okay, if something happens globally, you know, again, I mentioned that, you know, luck is when preparation meets opportunity. If something happens, our distributors should be, we're not selling onesies and twosies. We're trying to push heavier orders for them, the stock inventory in their DC, have it on the shelf, whatever it may be. So, you know, it happens internationally, Andrew. You know, obviously we have no control over that. And I think in terms of growth, I truly think that the new norm, when everything does settle down, if it does settle down, the new norm will probably be decently into the double digits above what our old norm was. You know, I think it might settle in somewhere around the 20%. We might see as high as 30%. But I think a lot of people over the last few months have really started paying attention to personal safety. And I think with the more people carrying our product, that's the more advertising we're getting for our product, the more conversations that it generates amongst the crowds out there. Okay, when somebody sees somebody else carrying Mace brand pepper spray, it's a conversation starter. So I think the norm that we're going to see going forward is going to be higher than the old norm. Like I said, 20% might be reasonable, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was high as 30 when all the dust settles.
Right. Now, with all the social distancing and summer vacation time and going to fall, that other season as well for that, especially if people are working remotely, they're going to be less tethered to the office. There's this huge surge in outdoor activity. And as long as there's a huge surge in outdoor activity, I have to imagine, but can you kind of provide in your consumer number, you know, maybe
again, a range of impact on the bear spray market that you guys have, and then kind of separately, because it could be bear spray or other consumer spray activities, in your consumer number, kind of like what share of it is private label?
Well, we're definitely seeing an uptick in the bear spray across private label and our brands. Okay, there's no hiding that. There's been an uptick. And I, you know, as far as we can surmise, people were sheltered down, you know, sheltered in place, locked down in their homes. And I think a large portion of the wildlife just got very comfortable roaming around where they normally didn't roam when a lot of people were out and about. Now people are coming out and these bears are thinking, hey, what the hell? You know, we had this place to ourselves the last couple months and now there's humans here. So, you know, we follow the bear videos and the bear stories online, and there's quite a few of them out there where there's altercations between man and beast, and that's driving a very nice uptick in bear spray. But like I said, across private label as well as our own brands, we're seeing that increase. And, you know, whether that subsides, I don't know. Well, you know, bear season kind of, you know, usually a good bear season when these things start waking up, but we're into August now and we're not seeing any let up on it yet. So I don't know when bear season actually, you know, comes to rest, but we're still experiencing strong numbers in that category. So.
Okay. I'll back out. I may have one or two more questions, but let me back out in case others have something.
Yes, operator, we have about 3 minutes left on our call. So if anybody else is in queue, we can answer one last question.
There are no further questions at this time.
Okay. Okay. Then I think Andrew just popped one last one in there. Deborah, does he have a question in there?
1 moment.
Is the line open?
And Andrew, your line is open.
Okay, great. Thanks.
You got to
come back
quick with Andrew.
Okay. So you talked about in the, again, the footnotes of your quarterly report was a license intangible asset associated that was being discontinued at the end of Q1 2021. Which was earlier than planned and thus amortized more quickly. Can you just say what that license intangible asset was associated with?
Yes, Washington Lab Bear Spray.
Okay. Is that the brand or is there a different brand?
Let me check here, read down through this.
Or we can take that up offline. I guess it's minutia. I don't need to do that. But thank you for a great investor slide deck that is much improved. It took me a while to find it, but we did. And a great quarter.
Yes, thank you. And for everyone on the line, the deck that Andrew is just referring to, if you go to mace.com on investor relations and then click on press releases, it'll show you on the left side Q2 2020 financial overview, and you just click on that. And Andrew, it was Washington Labs Bear Spray was a license that we bought from them that footnote was referring to.
Okay.
Okay, and we used to make it to make some spray. So if that answers your question. Operator, it's been 1 hour, so we'll wrap it up. Okay. And thank you, everybody, for joining, and we'll see you at the end of Q3 for some more results.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate your time.
Thank you all for joining today's conference call. You may now disconnect.